If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door, no insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
Did you ever think that you would be writing a huge memoir that encapsulates an entire sector of the cannabis industry?
You know, I have this aspect of delusion in my DNA.
Medna. How are you?
Good morning.
I'm Marcus.
Adam.
Nice to meet you.
Welcome to MedMen West Hollywood.
This one store pulls in more than 15,000 each day.
How many locations do you have?
5 in Southern California, 4 in New York.
I left in 2020, and these opportunistic, soulless, thoughtless, uninspired calculators showed up, and they just drove the company into the ground, leading with filing bankruptcy in 2024.
Is there something that you found that you would do differently in building this company up?
I would yank myself out of that world. I would beat myself into submission somewhere remote, and I would look into my own eyes, and I would say, you're gonna blink. And when you do, you're gonna have been with your wife for 20 years, and your kids will be at a stage where they're about to not think you're cool anymore. Between now and then, how do you want to spend your time?
Today on Misunderstood, we're diving into a world that's been controversial, revolutionary, and a battleground for policy, business, and culture, the cannabis industry. And who better to break it all down than my guest today, Adam Bierman. Adam isn't just a player in this space. He's one of the most influential pioneers in modern cannabis history. As the co-founder and former CEO of MedMen, Adam helped shape the legal cannabis industry as we know it today, building MedMen into one of the first billion-dollar cannabis companies in the United States. Under his leadership, the company expanded across multiple states, launched high-end retail stores, and created a brand that mainstreamed cannabis like never before, earning comparisons to Apple for its sleek, high-design dispensaries. But Adam's story isn't just about success. It's about risk, resilience, and reinvention. The cannabis industry has been a roller coaster, from regulatory challenges and financial hurdles to fierce public scrutiny. Adam was at the center of it all, experienced meteoric highs and some brutal lows. His journey is a real-life business thriller, and he's here to share the raw truth about what it really takes to disrupt an industry still shrouded in stigma. Now Adam is moving forward with new projects, sharing his insights as an industry leader and preparing for the release of his upcoming book, Weed Empire, where he tells the unfiltered story of what it took to build MedMen, the battles he fought, and where he sees the future of cannabis heading. Whether you love him, question him, or just want the inside scoop on what goes on behind closed doors in the cannabis business, this conversation is not one to miss. So buckle up, because we're about to get into the real story behind the rise, fall, and reinvention of one of cannabis's biggest names. Welcome to Misunderstood, Adam Bierman. Adam, thank you so much for joining me today on Misunderstood, all the way from Costa Rica.
I am so happy to be here and very excited about whatever is to come.
Okay, good. you have had an incredible story. Did you ever think that you would be, when you were a child, did you ever think you'd be at the place in your life that you'd be writing a huge memoir that encapsulates an entire, well, your life, but your and an entire sector of the cannabis industry?
I think that, you know, I have this aspect of delusion in my DNA, and I have to be realistic about that. And I think there's times in my life where that has led me astray, and there's times in my life where that has led me to wonderful, full, great experiences. And so I think with that aspect just inside of me and then being ingrained into me by my father, who, you know, I do write a lot about in this book, my younger version of myself, I don't think that that kid would have been surprised. I think that kid might have even said, yeah, I expected that, with complete naivete as to what it would take or what that might look like, or even if that was something that that kid wanted, or would want, or thoughtfully, you know, would want to construct for their life. Without any of that, yeah, I don't think it would be a surprise. You know, I feel like, you know, this has been kind of my destiny since I was little, being groomed to go disrupt and figure things out in a creative fashion, you know, to deliver people experiences that they're seeking. I think that's for good and bad and all the middle. And I don't know if you've read the whole thing yet, but like it's all in there and it's all those things. It's good and bad and all the middle. But no, right. I'm proud of the experience. I'm only 42 years old. God only knows what's next.
Who knows what's ahead? Exactly. So can we talk a little bit about your childhood? Tell us where you grew up, what kind of family you grew up in, and what you thought you would become.
I grew up in a very dysfunctional family. My best friend, the entire journey of my childhood was my father. My father is, you know, not the most mentally healthy individual. And there were aspects of my father that are pure genius. And there are other aspects of my father that are quite, you know, sad and toxic. Mm-hmm. And, growing up in that type of a dynamic, moving around the country, going from house to house, living with someone like my dad, with his outlook on the world, kind of as an outsider looking in, again, definitely being groomed to also look at the world that way. I don't think there's such thing as a typical childhood, but for me, my childhood is where I learned to be disciplined. I learned, you know, to impose that discipline on myself. The biggest thing from my dad is always ask why not. Mm-hmm. From the time I was little, I was in all different kinds of business ventures, and looking back at the level of delusion I must have had entering into them, but it was all a function of, but why not? And in some instances, there was no good reason. And
right.
So, you know, I'd push through.
Can you talk about some of the earlier jobs you had or quests you kind of took, paths you took?
Well, I've never had a job. I've never been an employee. I interviewed for some waiter jobs when I was like a sophomore in high school and didn't get any of those. And that was that. maybe I'm unemployable. I don't know. But in high school, you know, entrepreneurial ventures, you know, ranged from me giving lessons to kids in baseball. You know, I played baseball through college. And mm-hmm. by the time I was in high school, I was charging to give lessons to the younger kids, all the way to putting on all age dance concerts, essentially, like raves for kids without alcohol. And my senior year of high school, the biggest apex moment in that venture was I got the Black Eyed Peas convinced to come down to Oceanside, California. This was in 2000 to play at a roller rink as part of one of these events. And so I was into all of it and, you know, always going for it. Right. Even those times, definitely very full.
What was your experience as a child with cannabis? How did you end up getting introduced to drugs in general?
First time I smoked weed was in seventh grade. Some classmates introduced me to it. And, you know, after the first time I smoked weed, I found myself smoking weed every day. I did that until I was a freshman in high school. Going into my freshman year of high school, I decided to stop smoking weed cold turkey, focus on baseball, focus on school. There was nobody around me telling me that there was a way to do both. And looking back on how old I was in my developing brain, it was probably a positive to stop at that point.
Wait, can I hear more about that? Like, were you taking the wrong stuff? Were you abusing it? Like, how did it manifest in you?
No, the studies are pretty conclusive that until a human brain is fully developed, there is exposure, you know, negative outcomes to be had as a result of cannabis consumption. You know, nobody, you know, I am the farthest from a proponent of, you know, anybody other than an adult accessing cannabis, unless their doctor believes that prescribing some version of cannabis is going to help them with some severe medical issue. Right. I was smoking pot as a teenager and, you know, decided to stop and try to organize myself for what I wanted to accomplish.
Right. Okay. So let's fast forward a little bit. You're in your 20s. You know, you basically manifest this idea of a company, you know, I'm going to say in your garage, but, you know, it was like in your home. How did that even come about?
Yeah, I detail this one scene in the book where my girlfriend, she's now my wife, and we've been together 21 years. Mm-hmm. But at the time, my girlfriend, who was going to school for her PsyD, PhD in clinical psychology, she and I are going to an associate's apartment in Venice, California, mm-hmm. to pick up marijuana in wholesale quantities that we then put into these Whole Foods bags, put into my girlfriend's car. I didn't have a car at the time. My car had been repossessed. I was driving around on a beach cruiser. and, you know, we stored those Whole Foods bags in our apartment until in the next day, I put those bags in the basket of my beach cruiser bicycle house, which was our first store. And so for me, like my journey with cannabis was, you know, I was a pothead for 2 years as a kid. I've always had this why not attitude. And then, you know, as I detailed in the book, like I get exposed to this world of medical marijuana dispensaries in Los Angeles as a non-cannabis user. And in a place in my life where I had nothing to lose because I had nothing. My car had been repossessed. I was living in my parents' apartment and I was just scratching and clawing and trying to figure out what my path would be in this world. I was introduced to this opportunity where there was so much demand that I became aware of, people that wanted to walk into a marijuana dispensary and buy weed. Mm-hmm. There was so much of that. And the people on the other side supplying it, when I got involved, it was as if their job was to have the least amount of people knew they existed as possible. Hmm. And in like the Wall Street world, they would call that an arbitrage opportunity. Hmm. And, you know, as I witnessed that, I decided to jump in at first. And the only way at the time to do that was to open a store. Nobody was giving you information of what was really going on. This was a criminal activity at that point in time with no gray area, really. I mean, this was prohibited expressly in the law, and nobody, myself included at the time, had a license to do what they were doing. So mm-hmm. I get reintroduced back as a pure opportunity, financial opportunity. And as I wade into those waters and I get deeper into that world, the second thing happens, which is it becomes a mission. And it becomes about not the money and not the security personally, but it becomes about changing the world and making it a better place. And that second, you know, bump is really what sent me and I think this whole thing to the moon.
Right. What were some of the biggest legal and regulatory challenges you faced while climbing that ladder?
When I got involved in 2010 and we opened our first pot shop, and it was on the corner of Washington Boulevard and Abbot Kinney, mm-hmm. down the street from the apartment I was living in, everything was illegal. The only veil of legal protection that existed was that California, and there were a handful of West Coast states, had passed laws, created regulations around medical marijuana patients being able to have marijuana on them, share it with the people that needed it, and not fear arrest. And so to not fear arrest, they changed the rules and said, hey, if your doctor says you can have it, here's all the ways you can possess it. Show this to a police officer. You won't go to jail. And when I get involved, what's happening is the commercialization of that well-intentioned step forward was that there were lawyers and there were entrepreneurial, ambitious, mostly criminals who used that veil of protection to create this first network of medical marijuana dispensaries. They were unlicensed, but they had this thin veil of legal protection.
So can I just ask a quick question too? For an ignorant person here, explain to me, these dispensaries were allowed, they were on, there's this veil of kind of not legalizing it, but it was okay. This was a place for people to come that had this card that said, I have cancer, I have whatever, and I've been approved to get this. But those are the only people that were really allowed to come in the shop. But the owners of the dispensary would kind of use this as a place to conduct their illegal.
Well, no, even those that were completely committed to just this as their business, if you asked a prosecutor for the federal government at the time, they would call that operator a criminal breaking, and they would list all the federal laws. And if you asked the state at the time, they would say that operator has no license to operate. They're not paying taxes to the state under the business in which they're operating. As such, they are an unlawful business. And the locals at the time, regardless of the city we were in California, except for West Hollywood in Southern California, and it would be Oakland up in Northern California to start, in the cities, it was the same thing. There were no licenses. You were essentially squatting. So you were in this in-between place, often referred to as a gray market, with all of this demand, billions of dollars of demand of people that had discovered that marijuana helped them in their daily life. And they were willing to jump through those hoops and go to these places to access this plant.
Right. So, all right, this is incredibly interesting. So you ended, I mean, your thought process essentially was to destigmatize cannabis, its uses, and make it into a mainstream thing that people could accept and use, and you can walk down Fifth Avenue and go to Chanel and then pop into MedMen, right?
My thought when we got to that place on this journey for me was, it is my mission on this planet to make legal marijuana accessible to grownups the world over. And the way to do that is to mainstream marijuana, to destigmatize it within popular culture, and to present it front and center as something that is the opposite of shameful, something that those that associate with it can be proud of. Right. And so in that belief system, we manifested, like you said, a store on Fifth Avenue in New York City. We manifested a store on Robertson in Beverly Hills. We manifested that store on Abercrombie Boulevard. When people from around the world experience that store, whether they shop there, whether they see it from the outside, you know, whether all they do is browse, they take that experience back to their universe. And when they go back there, marijuana for them is now no longer stigmatized, but
it's
potentially
credible.
Yeah, great word. Thank you so much. It's credible.
Yeah.
And so it was credibility for the sake of permanence, because with permanence, the world is a safer, healthier, happier place, because access to legal weed, it has been proven, does that. Right. And so that was our mission. That was my mission.
Right. MedMen was once valued at over $2 billion, but ended up seeing a dramatic decline, which you talk about all, you know, you talk about how this all happens. But in your own words right here, what do you think went wrong?
I think that I got to witness firsthand, and now through writing this book over the last 3 years, my hope is I get to invite people in behind the curtain to share this experience of how the world really works. How the world works, and how the world that we live in, this culture of capitalist American pop culture world, how it really does this, right? And I got a front row seat to the realities therein. Mm-hmm. And it is so much more layered and nuanced and then real than, you know, this was a business that had a big rise and a spectacular fall, mm-hmm. right? We created an industry and we created an asset class in the face of giants who wanted nothing but to squash us. Right. And being the pioneers that changed the laws and then were the first, we were the first billion-dollar U.S. weed company. We were the first weed company to list on a stock exchange. The deal I had to figure out to get us public, you know, and I account for some of it in the book. It would be a 1,000-page case study for business school if we just went into that deal, mm-hmm. that we had to list the company in Canada because we were illegal in our own backyard, right. on a stock exchange when I went public, where the value of the whole exchange was smaller than the value of my company.
Right.
And so, you know, as we go through all of this and being first, and then ultimately me as an individual, as a human, I become a public caricature, right? I become the face of corporate marijuana and the spokesperson for corporate marijuana, right? There's a real story, and this story happens all the time. As I broke down walls and took on, you know, firing, you know, took on assaults from some of the most well-weaponized groups in the world, I for sure got hit along the way, right. as did my entire crew. And we just kept breaking down wall after wall in the face of everything from just the little money person who's being greedy, right, all the way to the Attorney General of the United States of America actually saying, stop those guys. Mm-hmm. And so at some
point, having what seemed like a personal vendetta about it.
Yeah, and I don't know where the vendetta may have been coming from, but mm-hmm. we went up against people with vendettas for all different kinds of reasons. Mostly it was because marijuana was going to hurt their pocketbook if they were pharma or alcohol or, you know, somebody else. But it could have been that they had a personal relationship where they really believe that the legalization of drugs is demonic and must be stopped and they'll pour their life savings into it. Right. Right? We saw that with Sheldon Adelson in Nevada, one of the richest men in the world, dedicating his resources and energy to try to stop that initiative. And we detail that a little bit in the book. And eventually, you know, the group on the ground there prevailed. Nevada has legal weed and, you know, there's shops all over Vegas and MedMen had the one closest to the airport. So this is a journey that's just true. And what happens in a true journey like this is that me being first meant I was naive. All the people that had seen this movie before, they went second, third, fourth, and fifth because they knew whoever goes first eventually bleeds out, right? And as I detail in the book, who's second? You know, GTI, Ben Kovler from the Jim Beam family dynasty, right? Who, you know, who better to understand how all of this will unfold? Who better to have the schooling of whatever familial connections he has influencing him to say, yeah, we're not going to be first, we'll be second or third, because we saw this at the end of alcohol prohibition, grandson, or whatever that happens to be. We're going to help. We're going to do it again. I didn't know any of that. I had to be naive enough to take a step forward, knowing there was no way it was going to end until I was done.
Right.
But, you know, I hadn't seen the movie before. So when I showed up one day for work and my chairman of the board was there and his personal lawyer, and they were there to ambush me like a scene straight out of one of the movies we've all seen, saying, this is your last day at the company you built. You know, I didn't expect that. How could I? I was too naive. Anybody that was more experienced would have never been in that spot, but they also would have never made the decisions I made to go first. And without someone going first, we don't have what we have. So we created a ton of value for a lot of people, and a lot of people made a lot of money. I left in 2020, and, you know, these opportunistic, soulless, thoughtless, uninspired, calculators showed up, and they just drove the company into the ground, leading with filing bankruptcy in 2024, you know, three CEOs later, and God knows how much more money they burned through. That's the other side of this cycle. I was part of hiring and training the initial 1,000-plus person workforce for the industry. What comes with that is that I don't have off-the-shelf training materials. These people didn't go to some finishing school. I had to be the school, which meant I had to be naive enough to say it's okay making that extra investment in our employees, when the truth is that from a dollars and cents standpoint, that was not going to be sustainable. But somebody had to educate those that were going to, you know, operate and grow this industry thereafter. And, you know, so this is just all real. I don't look at it as good and bad. I look at it as a lot of decision making, and that decision making, you know, as it always is in entrepreneurship, is made without all of the information and a lot of intuition, and a lot of it's wrong. And at the end of this, all you need with something that gets this big, and there's too many people, so many people that want to go dissect it for its parts and suck the money and value out of it, regardless of what it was actually doing. All it takes is a couple bad decisions, some bad luck. And, you know, you wake up one day and I show up and they say, it's your last day. Get the fuck out. And that was 10 years after, you know, Laura and I drove to that first store with our Whole Foods bags of all this weed, saying we don't know what we're doing, but we're jumping off the diving board together in the middle of the night. And we hope there's water in the deep end.
If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door. No insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. Forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
Right. And as you said, being an entrepreneur, you know, it's like you're at the forefront. You were the first ones. So you have to learn from your mistakes. You didn't have somebody in front of you where you said, okay, let's pivot around this because we know that didn't work. So, I mean, you had to go through it ultimately, don't you think?
Yes, I believe I had to go through it. And it wasn't like while I was going through it, I wasn't seeking others who, as I call it, had seen the movie before. Mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm. I kept thinking about that Facebook movie that Aaron Sorkin did, which was so well written. Yeah. And I kept, you know, thinking about the board of directors and, you know, thinking about the people that were giving those two kids information along the way, even if they didn't want to hear it, ultimately leading to one of the partners ouster or departure, however you want to call it. I was yearning for that so badly that in times I made bad decisions, trying to attach me and the company to people that I thought could help guide us, because I knew for sure I hadn't seen the movie. Right. If we were a tech company, if we were anything legal, that's the one big part, is like we were an illegal business. How many people I talked to and said, well, I can't work around you because if I do that, I'm going to lose everything else. Like you're a criminal. So We were an illegal business, but we were being expected and we were holding ourselves to a standard to try to act like a not only legal, but a, you know, billion-dollar public company.
Right.
And I couldn't put people around us who had any experience in a public company because they would, the last thing they would do is come work in marijuana.
Right. Right.
I mean,
fascinating. Yeah. You've been described as both a visionary and a controversial figure. How do you think, well, how would you describe yourself?
Determined, unabashed, brutally honest, and as efficient as possible with my time on this planet.
Mm. Looking back and doing this 3 years of writing that you said, is there something that you found that you would do differently in building this company up?
Well, that is a very loaded question. Let's break it down. So I can give you the most honest answer possible. So in what respect, like if I could go back and do it again, if I could talk to myself at a certain point, like give me a perspective and I really, I'll give
you the answer. Mean, well, cause I know I've listened to you talk a lot about the process of doing 3 years of the book and how personal those stories were to you. And I'm curious, you know, like when you were thinking about those stories and the emotion that it triggered in you, were you like, you know, had I not done this, we would have been somewhere else. Or I'm so happy this happened this way. Or I can't sleep at night because I'm still thinking about this mistake. You know, that's kind of where I'm going with that.
So I write a lot in my book about Phil Stutz, you know, and I don't want to get into this stuff without giving him a ton of credit. You know, I look at Phil Stutz as somebody who really helped save my life and definitely created the opportunity for me to give my children a whole life. You know, one of the things he just beat into me is that, you know, outcomes, are not the measure, right? Outcomes are what we seek as many of per day as possible so that we can learn from them and so they can inform our next decision. So it's not, for me, I'm at a point in my life where no, there's no part of the book where I stayed up all night and I said, oh my God, I wish, because maybe there was a negative outcome. But if I'm still today learning from that outcome, the outcome gave me what it was supposed to give me. There's nothing for me to lose sleep over. I'd lose sleep over if I said, you know, wow, I've never analyzed those outcomes before and they're not informing my decisions today. Then I would definitely have a problem going to sleep tonight. You know, on the human side, because of... On the human side, if I could go back and talk to my earlier self, I would yank myself out of that world. I would beat myself into submission somewhere remote. And I would look into my own eyes and I would say, you're going to blink. And when you do, you're going to have been with your wife for 20 years and your kids will be at a stage where they're about to not think you're cool anymore. Between now and then, how do you want to spend your time? And I wouldn't have left until that kid understood what I was trying to get through to him. I mean, that's my biggest takeaway, you know, from the process of recounting and over again, you know, this period of my life.
Right. Wow. That's a great answer. You said the company went bankrupt in 2024, right? Or filed for bankruptcy. What happened to all the brick and mortar stores? Were they bought by other companies?
The level of shenanigans, and I think the street word is fuckery, that went on with the people that came after they threw me out and all the different ways they try to skin the cat and put money into their own pockets and siphon off one thing to put in another place. I literally disconnected. And I make a point not to follow it. My book, towards the end of the book actually ends with a scene in Phil Stutz's office. And this is, you know, this is what happened. And that's why, again, I thank him saving me. The beginning of the scene was he said, you know, Adam, you can sit here and fight to stay at the company, but I want to flip it for you. How much would you pay to never have to deal with any of these people again? You know, and that really shook my perspective, because my true answer was like everything I have except for what I need for my kids and basic stuff, because there is no trade worth it, anymore. I got off with that story.
No, I love it. I think it's great. Go ahead.
Please.
Okay. Let's get into cannabis in general. I'm curious. Okay. So it's not federally legal. It's not legal in all the states. What is the biggest hurdle? What's preventing this from being just a normal everyday thing that people can access?
The way the world works. And that's the truth.
Meaning,
there's nothing prevent. Let's talk about what's not preventing it. And then we can get into how the world works. Okay. Here's what's not preventing it. Overwhelming medical studies. They exist. Here's what's not preventing it. Case studies proving that petty theft and crime decrease when marijuana is accessible in a legal fashion. Oh, that already exists. Actually, the FBI has been sending that out in its annual crime report, you know, since I was at MedMen. So that was, you know, God, I don't want to age, but that was 15 years ago. Here's what's not going to stop it. But there's other countries that have done it, and you know, you can see how the black market is still thriving, and it's not trend. No, right? Other markets have taken. I was in Israel last year. Their medical cannabis market is so refined and so mature and so accessible and so destigmatized. Just can't say that anymore. So that's what's not going to stop it. And the last thing that won't stop it is there's not enough demand, because the more people that learn how to access this plant in a healthy way, the more cannabis consumers there are the world over, and the less stigmatized it is and the more mainstream it is, the more people every day that get introduced to the plant. Mm-hmm. Here's what is stopping it, the way the world works. There are institutions that control how things evolve. Right. And everything from regulations. Mm-hmm. Regulations aren't just, you know, oh, I have a license to sell pot in my state now. Regulations are everything from how it works with hemp and Delta 9 and things that aren't marijuana being sold as marijuana, and where marijuana can be sold or can't be sold. You still can't buy marijuana along your everyday shopping experience. You have to make an extra stop. And why is that? Because people can't see that is a clog in the machine. No, it's purposeful. It's because it's not supposed to work, because there are interests being protected, right? Whether those interests are the status quo interest of where that consumer is spending those dollars. Otherwise, if I'm not going to go out of my way to make a special stop along the way, I'm going to go ahead and use that same money at the grocery store to consume that same effect. One of the fascinating things we saw in America as states legalized marijuana, and then we got a year, 2 years, 3 years into it, is the direct correlation of cannibalization of beer sales and marijuana legalization. Because for so many people, from just a chill, take the buzz off, you know, get a buzz, like take the stress off and just sit into my, you know, chair moment. A lot of Americans drink beer. When marijuana is legal, they switch. And so what is happening is, if you still have to go out of your way, well, great. Then I will keep it in the status quo, which is buy your six pack instead of buy your vape pen. On top of everything else, what you have is you have big alcohol and big tobacco. Big tobacco is thriving. As Americans, we don't see it unless we're paying special attention, because America is not the rest of the world. But big tobacco is thriving, and the transition to non-smokables, vapes and pouches, is sending those companies to the moon. But what are those companies proving out? They are not cigarette companies. They are effect companies. They are there to deliver you, Rachel, an effect. Right. And for tobacco people, that effect is a buzz. Now, let's say smoking is seen as somehow unhealthy or stigmatized. I will give you a pouch. I will give you a vape.
But which still has the same end result that creates cancer. And but
as horrible as it is. Yeah. Oh, that's a horrible effect. So for them to go ahead and say, and I'm figuring out how to give you the effect you feel when you use cannabis. Of course, they're trying to figure that out.
Right.
And the reason right now it's heading towards those kind of groups controlling this, and then they'll make it legal. They'll make it accessible. Their products will be in the grocery store. Right. It's because those pioneering groups, those that came after me, those that filled up that initial asset class, they can't stop fucking bickering with each other. They can't stop getting in, you know, out of each other's way, and they can't create a unified vision that, you know, an industry for all that is permanent benefits everybody. And that infighting amongst a class of individuals who, by and large, themselves are rebels. That's why they came into this in the first place, and now they don't play nice with each other. It makes perfect sense, but it's a joke to, you know, somebody with a couple $100 billion market cap, that's some multinational conglomerate looking at, oh, that's a cute business that does $1 billion a year in revenue. We'll just scoop them up and we'll make them part of our effects company now.
Right.
So it hasn't happened yet because the powers that be that run the world of money, right, have been positioning themselves as they always do, methodically, letting lunatics like myself pioneer and create it so that they can then go ingest it in a legal, strategic, long-term way into their mega business. And that's how the world works.
Do you see similarities between the cannabis market, I guess, and psychedelics? I mean, I've had people on that are, you know, opening up clinics for ketamine and all sorts of things for PTSD and depression. And this seems like people are really becoming more accepting of psychedelics, almost more so than cannabis in some places.
I was there, so it's so exciting that I got to witness it happening. Mm-hmm. But cannabis broke down the stigma around people ingesting effects to get through and enjoy their everyday life. I can't speak for you, Rachel, but growing up, the shame around someone who had to take sleeping pills, the shame around someone who had to take a stimulant in order to focus, they would hide those things.
Mm-hmm.
Now there is a pride in the fact that I'm owning my own day as someone runs around with their juggling their vapes, their pills, their this and their that, you know, all the way to their, you know, mushroom tea drink, because that's them taking control of their lives.
Right.
To me, that flip in culture in America, cannabis was front and center. And once cannabis flipped for people, then I think it's easy for all these other categories of, you know, substances that deliver effects to follow suit. And I think it's wonderful that people are looking at mushrooms, you know, versus looking at pharmaceutical drugs. And I think it's wonderful that there are people, whether it's, you know, ketamine clinics done right, or whether it's all the other psychedelics or the legalization movement around psilocybin, all of that is in the same vein, giving people access and an opportunity to ingest products from the earth that, as opposed to harming them, actually have the ability to enhance that individual's existence. And so it's just a race as to who's going to own that market. And then that will determine, you know, how people experience those products going forward.
If you're looking for a premium hemp-derived THC and CBD products that actually work, you have to check out Hometown Hero. Whether you need to unwind after a long day, get better sleep, or just take the edge off, they've got something for you. Hometown Hero is about quality and transparency. Their products are rigorously third-party tested, ensuring purity and potency every single time. They've got everything from delicious gummies to smooth vapes and more. And listen, I'm not someone who normally takes gummies, but I decided to give Hometown Hero a try. And I've got to tell you, I slept like a baby. I woke up feeling rested and refreshed, and I totally get why people love these. Plus, when you buy from Hometown Hero, you're not just getting top-tier products, you're supporting veterans. A portion of this purchase goes to helping those who served, so you can feel good about where your money is going. If you want to try it for yourself, head to hometownhero.com and use code UNDERSTOOD at checkout for 20% off your order. That's hometownhero.com. Use code UNDERSTOOD for 20% off. Trust me, if it worked for me, it's going to work for you too. Okay, and let's talk about that for a second. For the average person, and we talked about this a little earlier before I started, can you kind of break down the different types, what they are, how people can take this in a way that really helps them. So they don't have this stigma of, oh yeah, people that are smoking weed are always just lazy people on the couch, or they have to get through life this way because they're too anxious and it just gives them an even keel feel. But when you walk into these dispensaries and you have no idea what you're looking at, you just end up walking right by, or you end up abusing it because you don't know what you're doing. So can you break all that down for me?
I would look at a dispensary like looking at a gym. And so if someone who had never worked out before in their life walked into a gym, fancy, not fancy, you know, Gold's Gym in Venice Beach, it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. And that person walked out and be like, not for me. You know, I grabbed on that bar and pulled really hard and it really hurt this part of my shoulder. And I know I have shoulder issues, so gyms aren't for me. Like, I get it. But, you know, I see marijuana as the same thing, right? To break it down to its parts as simple as possible, the plant, the marijuana plant, has a couple hundred compounds that mm-hmm. make up that plant. They're for the most part called cannabinoids. Okay, so we know about THC because THC is what Cheech and Chong smoke that make them go ha ha ha. THC is the part that makes you high. Okay, that's one compound. I said there are hundreds, over 200. There are compounds of the 200 that directly correlate with a human's sleep. As opposed to THC, there's a compound called CBN. Mm-hmm. That compound, and I can tell you firsthand for myself, but also we can point you to all the clinical research. When that compound is ingested into humans, it helps facilitate quality sleep in a way that would blow your mind. There are 109, or there's 200 more. And what science has done, and it was really Israeli science to start, and now it's the world over, is but it started with Israel. They sequenced the DNA of cannabis, Israel did, and then they started pulling it apart and saying, what does this do? What does that do? What does this do? What does that do? And so you have what people refer to now as this miracle plant. Why is that? Because for so many people, it does so much. I count in my book for, you know, the story that really that changed everything for me, where I flipped when this became my mission versus my opportunity at business. So there was this young girl in particular, who had an inoperable tumor in her brain. And after exhausting all options available to her mom, one of the most amazing, inspiring humans I've ever met in my life, they were able to access cannabis oil. And after the cannabis oil treatment, she went back to St. Jude's Hospital. And they scanned her brain and they called the mom and said, you got to come back. We got to do the scans again. We think there was a problem. The mom brings her back. They scan him again and go, I don't know what to tell you, but I can't see a tumor.
Wow.
So it wasn't necessarily the THC or the CBN. And I couldn't sit here as a doctor and tell you which of these cannabinoids. And what really is important is it's the combination. They call it the entourage effect, right? And so medicine and science is right now really studying what combinations of these cannabinoids, you know, have unlock these, you know, miracle outcomes. But the shrinkage of cancerous tumors is something that cannabis does.
Yeah.
And so again, going into the gym, right, and saying, I hurt my shoulder and this guy has a six pack and, you know, that person has low body fat. It's like, yeah, but they're all in there for different reasons and they're using different machines and they know how to use them.
Right.
So what I would, you know, recommend to people looking at marijuana is look at it as something where here is a plant that has over a couple hundred different ingredients. And when you put them together in different variations, they literally can connect in our bodies in ways that are miraculous. So what are you looking for, right? Well, I'm just looking, you know, when I go home, I don't like to have a drink anymore. I know the calories and the liver damage and, you know, I don't like, it makes me kind of feel bad in the morning. I don't want to drink 200 calories of Chardonnay anymore. So how do I take the edge off, relax, but still be present and not giggly for the rest of my evening? Okay, ooh, that is.
I want one of those.
That's great, right? And that's a way to look at this plant, and you can definitely, certainly achieve that. In the same way, now we know how to achieve. Hey, I don't want to be a cannabis user. I don't want to smoke anything, but I don't want pharma to help me sleep. How can cannabis help me? Okay, well, actually, there's some really great companies that make these CBN slips you put under your tongue or pills. There's even CBN hot tea that you drink as sleepy time tea that's available. Oh my goodness. So I just urge people to look at this miraculous plant as something that is built to connect with the human body. And as we can study and understand what the plant does, we match it with what it is that we're seeking. Go right. in with a purpose, and this plant will change your life.
And do you believe that these, you know, when you are walking into certain stores and you do see the packs of things with the THC and whatever it says, and I'm getting sent different things, do those actually have enough ingredients in there to give you an effect? Or do you have to call your local, you know, drug dealer or go into one of these dispensaries to get some effects?
It's a great question. And it's a crappy answer. And it's because it's how the world works. And it won't be the answer for long, but what has happened is the core audience that, you know, the marijuana industry has not been able to grow from, man, I tried my hardest, man, I went overboard trying to bring in mainstream, you know, hard parents, working mom, like I tried to, but what's happened is the industry has just stayed hyper-focused on young males who represent a disproportionate amount of users, and they use a disproportionate amount of time. And those people, for the most part, are seeking being high, which is THC. Unfortunately, the reason this is a crappy answer is that when you buy a vape pen that brags about how much THC in it is in it, or you buy a gummy that brags about how much THC is in it, what that is that's a distillate. So what they've done is they've gone through a chemical process, more than likely, but even if it was completely natural, which it probably wasn't, where they have broken down that plant material and they have extracted out just the THC. And then they're mixing that with a cutting agent and some flavoring, and they're making you high. So it's the opposite of the entourage effect. It's the opposite of, well, the THC, when in combination with these other couple of things, they actually help. And then at that point, it's unfortunate because even if someone likes the feeling of feeling buzzed or high, and they're accessing that vape pen with the THC distillate, they're missing out on all the other benefits. So this, all these incredible things, when you pervert it this way, when you pull it apart and you don't allow it to do what it's supposed to do, like as a whole organic, you know, material, you're left as a one trick pony.
Right.
And so I think, unfortunately, that's my answer, is it's marijuana industry is a one trick pony, and there has to be innovation. And I know it'll come from big alcohol or big tobacco with effects. Maybe somebody will surprise me and it'll come from cannabis, but only after that innovation will people be able truly to access this variety of products using cannabis, let's call them ingredients, but cannabinoids that say, this helps you do this, this helps you feel this way. And I think that's the future. In the meantime, it sucks because you got to educate yourself and you've got to go into the gym knowing there's no trainer, there's no insurance waiver to sign. And if you ask the person next to you, you're just as, like any gym, you're just as much to get bad information as you are good information.
That's right. That's right. So with all the experience you've had, what is your prediction for the future of this industry?
I think we're past the point of no return for a while on culture's acceptance of cannabis use as something that can be done responsibly in a healthy manner, where people can be proud of it. I think that we're there. I think we're over that hump. I also think we are in a place where businesses involved with marijuana will no longer be illegal or criminal at all. I think that they will fall under a classification where they'll be able to get treated like legitimate businesses. That's all happening. The question is, who is going to be delivering these products to the world? And right now, my prediction is you're going to get it from British American Tobacco, Altria, Philip Morris, AB InBev, Those are the organizations that you're going to see win the day here, because it's not just me that was the pioneer, took all the shrapnel and, you know, and then died this crazy entertaining death. But it's the entire class now, that first class that came with me. You know, it's not MedMen that filed bankruptcy at the end of last year after it stopped. Like, the entire industry is down over 90%, 90%.
Yeah.
We were first. I was first. It was entertaining. I'm the face. But every single other organization, $1 billion plus or not, they have gone through 90%+ of deletion in their value. They're sitting there stuck. So it's going to be hard for them to get out of that stuck place. But again, this is how the world works. I'll leave you with this. You know, one of the things I talk a lot about in the book is my experience with the online poker boom through my family that was involved at the very beginning, and how much me witnessing what happened with online gambling, how much that informed how I went about this journey with MedMen.
All right. So as you've mentioned throughout this interview, you do have a book coming out, Weed Empire. What can readers expect from it? What do you want the takeaway to be? Or if you want to answer, I want to know what the most shocking thing we're going to read in the book is.
I think that, you know, being someone who has just consumed a lot of content, books, movies, shows about this, you know, how business works, how prohibition works, how government works, how laws really work. You know, I think what is maybe most fascinating about this book is that normally you wait until everyone's dead. I remember one of my favorite shows growing up, Boardwalk Empire. Like, that was about the end of prohibition, but like, that was 80 years or 70 years after the end of prohibition. You know, Joe Kennedy was certainly no longer alive, and his kid was president and no longer with us either, right? Like, a long time ago. This book covers this recent history of how the cannabis industry as an industry was born, and all the things that happen, at least to me, behind the scenes to make that happen, when something is going from illegal, kind of like alcohol was illegal, to legal. It doesn't just happen with the snap of a finger. There's this transition from illicit to legitimate. And nobody tells those stories. And they certainly don't tell them while people are still alive. And they don't tell them while those people are still relevant. But in this book, these people are still here. These people are still doing the same stuff, whether they're in government or whether they're in business. And this is an account of the last 10 years of, you know, some of those people and how this is all evolved. So it's like, you can read a book and in real time understand how history is unfolding as you then read a newspaper.
Yeah. Adam, I'm curious, what's next for you? Are you looking for a comeback, a redemption, a fresh start?
You know, I've spent the last 5 years dedicating the same amount of energy that I spent my whole life dedicating towards what I call business and creation to my family. And I think, you know, what's now for me is that, you know, I'm living a life where that's my new North Star. And part of that, in a healthy whole way, is to contribute in some type of professional way to the world. And, you know, I'm doing that in marijuana and in other emerging industries, you know, taking this crazy, entertaining, but experience that happened to me. And this is the experience of how it works. It's like Alexander Hamilton, my favorite play. It's like, this is the room where it happens. Like, having been in the room where it happens on so many levels, now what's next for me is applying that to people working on everything from cannabis to AI, because it is no different regardless of industry. It happens over and over again. I wish there was somebody there to have sat me down and said, hey, here's what happened in my journey when I didn't know anything. You know, take some of these tidbits and use it in yours.
Right. And that's how people feel. They want to be in the room where it happens, right? And you were there. All right. Weed Empire comes out April 22nd. Please tell people where they can find your book.
Everywhere books are sold. I am so honored that Ben Bella Books and Simon & Schuster decided to take this marijuana story and the story that, you know, had a small dent in the universe and run with it. So buy it on Amazon. I just finished recording the audiobook myself. was a crazy experience. And, you know, I'm looking forward to sharing my story with as many of your listeners that are interested. I hope they will find things they can take with them to live their fullest, best life.
Absolutely. I think there's a lot of lessons from you to be learned. I can't wait to see you when you come to Palm Beach. So you
It's a deal.
You can explain to me my new experience with weed, gummies, whatever it's going to be. I'm very excited.
It's a deal.
And I really wish you the best of luck. You're a fantastic guy. You've been through a lot. And I can't wait to see what you do in the future.
Thank you, Rachel. Have a wonderful day. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to Misunderstood. I'm your host, Rachel Yucatel. Please be sure to subscribe to the show and give us a 5-star rating and review. You can support the show by joining our Patreon at patreon.com/misunderstood with Rachel Yucatel. Do you have ideas for the show or want to reach out? Email us at info@misunderstoodpodcast@gmail.com. That's spelled MISS understood. Thank you so much, and I'll see you next time.